subscribe to Donnie Houston Podcast, man.
Donnie Houston.
Yeah, man, it's going down. It's Donnie Houston Podcast. I am Donnie Houston. Check it out, man. We got a real special guest, man. I'm talking about, man, this is a UGK family. You know what I'm saying? It is the 30th, you know, anniversary of UGK. So it's only right. You know what I'm saying? That we got him coming through, man, to chop it up, man. This is Bobo Luciano. What's going on, man?
What's up, buddy?
How you feeling, man?
Man, I'm feeling beautiful. Thanks for having me, man.
Already,
it's an honor to be here.
Man, it's an honor. You know, this is what's crazy about the podcast. As I was thinking, it's just like, man, there's so many people that I've heard about over my life. And then especially when you get to the UGK, the Pimp C thing, after the book. And yeah, just a lot of those stories. You know, it was certain people that I was like, man, I got to meet this person. I got to meet that. I said, man, I got to meet Bobo. Which I've been wanting, you know what I'm saying, since my man Bobo just lost his baby in the house. Yeah. You know, that always stuck with me, you know what I mean?
Yes.
From a long time ago as a kid hearing a song. And then to be able to, you know, read the book or whatever, and, you know, see those things and that. And I was just like, oh, yeah, I got to meet Bobo. So to have you here, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's an honor, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah, for sure. What's going down, man?
Oh, man, I'm in A-Style.
Yeah.
I'm at the Donnie Houston show, you know what I'm talking about? This is my second home.
Yeah.
Now, my mom's from Houston.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm a strange bird, so I'll be probably one of the only ones you can say from Dallas. I ain't going to say the only one. The only one I know that came up in Houston and Dallas.
Hmm.
So
your whole life you've been back and forth?
Yeah. Yeah, my mom's from Third Ward. And so I was what, you know, you call a Greyhound baby. You know what that is?
On that bus and going, yeah.
Yeah, my mom put me on that bus with a, you know, thing of chicken and some light bread. And my Aunt Virgie or my Aunt Doris would be down here waiting on me to pick me up at the bus stop. And, you know, I came up off of Scott Street. On a street called Noah. Well, you know, my mom then came up off of Live Oak on a street called Berry.
Yeah, okay.
You know, she could walk to Jack Yates.
Wait. So are you going to school out here anytime, or are you just on a visit?
The summers. The summers. I had to spend my summers up here. So a lot of summers. And this is where I got a lot of my blackness from. I'm going to be honest. Because where I came from, you know, my mom and them was real strict. You know, they came up, you know, real Christian household. My dad and his family, I mean, I might have about 4 or 5 pastors in my family. Hmm. So, you know, it was kind of, and me being on this side of the family, I was the youngest grandchild, youngest one in my family. So I was kind of like just always sucking up everything, you know what I mean? And I can remember coming down here in the summers and I have a cousin, Charles, we call him Charles Jr. His name is Charles Young. And he would, man, I mean, the Richard Pryors, the Mays, Frankie Beverly and Mays. Because I can remember, you know, every time I came to Houston, it seemed like Mays was coming to town.
Hmm.
And I don't remember that like that in Dallas until probably the 80s. But all during the 70s, Frankie Beverly and Mays act like they lived in Houston.
So this to your family, this is your introduction to black music. So.
Oh, my God, yeah, man. The Frankie Beverly and Mays, the Parliament Funkadelics, everything that, you know, Isley Brothers, you know, because I didn't hang with my sisters when I was young. So I didn't have and my dad worked 2 jobs, so he was hardly ever at home. So I gravitated coming down here to Houston, being around another male, you know what I mean? So he was like my big brother.
Hmm.
So, yeah, he gave me the game.
Yeah, yeah.
He gave me the game. You know, I remember coming down here. Magic 102 was the big station at that time. And the Rhinestone Cowboy. You remember that?
I know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Rhinestone Cowboys, R.P. Cola, my boy, rest in peace, Rick, you know, from Royal Flush.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I remember all that. I had all those records.
Man, okay. So are you trying to rap at this time, or you just enjoying it?
No, I'm a kid, bro. Mm. I'm a kid. Well, I always was into the music. I came from the DJ side of things, you know. So I was, you know, DJing parties all through Dallas and everything like that, and had my own radio show and that type of thing for 8.5 years. But yeah, you know, I just fell into the rap thing. But I've always, I mean, come on, since, hey, Rapper's Delight, it grabbed me, you know, and especially when once The Message came out, I was done. So it's hip hop, and then I came down here to Houston, and the culture is just so thick, you know, with African Americans and y'all. Black Chamber of Commerce is a lot bigger than what we have in Dallas when I was coming up, you know. Y'all have Cornell X. We got our boy John Wiley Price. You know, we have some similarities, but I like Houston for the blue collar of it. You know, I like it, man. Love it. Yeah, you know, this has always been my second home, and Port Arthur is my third. You know, so you know, Dallas, Houston, Port Arthur.
Yeah,
it's my homes right there.
Yeah. So tell me, man. You know, how do you even start kind of crossing up, you know, as early with like UGK, you know what I'm saying, with that whole thing?
Well, we had gotten in, we were like the clique I was in Dallas. You know, my older brother, DJ Snake, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with a group called Nemesis.
I heard of them. Yeah.
Nemesis was the first group out of Dallas to sign to a major label. And he produced Nemesis, and he produced the trendsetter, Run C. I don't know if you...
I heard of Run C.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Run C. Mm-hmm. And so he had two acts on a major label, and we were doing our thing through Dallas, and we were touring with the Ghetto Boys early on. I remember them showing up in the jalopies all through, you know, Austin, the San Antonios, all over Texas, bro. We would, you know, Big Chief and our manager, Rich Mack, they was kind of tight. So every time they had a show, they call us and vice versa. So that's how I got started. And then I became Ron C's hype man, being on tour with, who was that? Too Short, Shorty the Pimp tour. Ron did two years in the pen. He got caught up, you know, at an early age, around 18, got, you know, 20-year sentence.
Mm.
And that was right before his first album came out. And once we did... you know, Snake and I helped him promote that first album because, I mean, he wasn't here. No videos or anything like that. But when he returned home, it was a movement almost like when Pimp C came on. You know,
You schooling me now, Dallas Hip Hop, because I ain't never had nobody to come on here and really break this whole thing down.
Ron C.
So he was the first one out of Dallas to really kind of, even though Nemesis had the deal, you would say
Ron was more the street rapper.
Okay.
You know, he was talking about pimping and talking about the street life and things like that. And Nemesis was talking about street life, but more on the positive tip. You know, we were hip hop heads. You know what I mean? They were in the African pieces back then and everything like that, way before people were in jewelry. You know, and so Ron C was a little bit more flashier. He was the first person in Dallas to roll Dayton's. You know, he's actually from California. So when he came down from California, he came down with a lot of culture from California that we didn't have. And he grew up here, I think, went to high school in Dallas and got hooked up with a serious organization in Dallas and ended up doing 2 years on a 20-year sentence. But once that album came back out, it was a full go. Once he got out of jail and that Back on the Streets album came out, I want to shout out to Ron C. Matter of fact, that's my brother.
He's on, and you're his hype man.
I was his hype man, and then we were on tour with Shorty the Pimp, and we're killing it.
How was this going with y'all on Too Short tour? I mean, come on, man.
And that was strange because, you got to realize, man, back at the end, there wasn't that many rappers around. And pretty much all the rappers they knew about each other. You know, it's not like today's times. I mean, Ron was from California. I think he's from Richmond, and... You know, they talk real proper grammar out there. And so, you know, when he rapped in the beginning, a lot of people kind of compared him to Short. And Short heard about it. And Short had a choice whether or not to put us on that tour or not. But he put us on that tour. It was the headliners were Too Short and Spice and then Run C. Yeah. And then every city we went to, it was a different lineup. But it was us three on the main you know, going to every city.
Man, what do you remember about that? Because it just sounds crazy. You're talking about Short, Spice.
Oh, bro, it was It was a great tour. I mean, I remember it was more, you know, hip hop was a showman craft back then. You know, stage shows had to be more than just walking around and doing that. You had to, you know, your DJ had to do some type of tricks or something. You know?
And everybody had their, it was about originality. Everybody
That was the main thing about then. You couldn't bite nobody. You couldn't sound like nobody. That was the thing. And everybody was distinct. You know, you could tell everybody apart from everybody. And that's why it was kind of a different thing. He wasn't rapping like Short. He just had a voice. I mean, his voice sounded kind of like Too Short when he rapped. And so when he talked about pimping on a couple of songs, you know, so there you have it, you know. So, yeah, and then we, how was it? Was wild. You know, I can remember when we, you know, we practiced and got our whole stage show together. Our whole theme was like this prison thing. You know, he just got out of the pen. The album is labeled Back on the Street. He's got on his Grogan's, his blue Dickies, and his light blue Dickies shirt like he's an inmate. And in Dallas, you know, our which I got Harris County down here, we got our main one is called Lou Sterrett. That's our county jail. And in Lou Sterrett back then, you had two colors you could wear. White was all the regular inmates, and the crazy inmates wore their bright orange. So that was my uniform. I had the bright orange, you know, with the prison number on it. I was bald back then. I had this wig afro, and I had this real gas chainsaw. And so going to that first show, we thought, okay, we had practiced. They told us we was going to have 15 minutes. Well, when we got there, man, oh my God, they had added probably about six acts. I mean, Second to None, DJ Quick, In Too Deep. It's a hip-hop marathon out there. So they said, okay, y'all got 5 minutes. Three to 5 minutes. Look at each other. What the fuck we gonna do? That's one song. Back then, you know, 4 to 5 minutes was song. I said, all right, bro. And so we had it to where he was coming out and I was gonna come out with that chainsaw at a certain time. I said, well, bro, as soon as that hook started on that first song, I'm coming out. And when I did that shit, the crowd went berserk. And so much to the point to where once we got to the next city, everybody was talking about our stage show and they bumped us up to where we were closer. I said bumped us back to where we were closer to the headline, you know. So, yeah. And then I guess probably our fourth or fifth show, we was, you know, we did Houston, we did Arkansas, Atlanta. We did a bunch of shows. We was in Lafayette, Louisiana at the Cajun Dome. And we in this big dressing room and the concert promoter is acting real shitty with the money. Cajun Dome is packed to the capacity, you know.
Ain't no reason to be acting.
I mean, manager went in the office. He's got money stacked up, but he don't want to pay. So we sitting there. I mean, everybody's not dressed real. Spice. Shout out to my boy G-Nut. That was Spice's hype man. And Shorts in there. A couple more people. And then Chad and Bun walk in. That was the introduction. I'll show you a picture from that night. Blow your mind. Yeah, and so I befriended Bun in the beginning. You know, we coming to Dallas. We just signed a Jive. We're going to finish, you know, this album, and we're recording our next album in Dallas, studio called The Sound Lab. I said, okay, no problem. And so when they got there, they called me. They called Ron. I show up. You know, we was before Blunts. We was rolling joints. So, I go out there with a bunch of weed. We rolling joints, smoking, and next day, what you doing? Come on, come to the studio. So it just became a, you know, and then we get to riding around Dallas. We just kicked it, man. And from then, we just became brothers. And he offered me a job.
Where are they at, like, album-wise at this point?
This is, I don't know if they did too much touring off of Too Hard to Swallow, but it's between those albums, Too Hard to Swallow and Super Tight. And we were recording Super Tight. I don't know if you heard the story about Super Tight, but you probably have, but don't realize what happened. They had a pretty much a full album already done. And they had a break-in at the house on San Jacinto where the whole album got stolen. And plus, coupled with, you know, Angela Wimbush was, well, is married to Ron Lisley. I don't know if they still are or not, but she was married back then, and she was taking care of all his business. So a couple of the songs that you probably, the viral songs that you've heard of that are going out, like Smooth Slangin' with Bun B, mm-hmm. you know, that's Isley Brothers sample. She wouldn't clear it. Menage a Trois, mm-hmm. she wouldn't clear it, you know, and... You know, he had a couple of more songs. Weed, 93 Mac. Oh, that 93 Mac was so fucking serious. You ever heard 93 Mac?
I don't know if I heard
it. It's a brand new 1993 Lac rolling down the avenue in my white Cadillac. Ooh, you ain't never heard that?
I don't know if I heard
that. That bitch is a classic. It's on YouTube.
I gotta pull
it
up.
It's real.
I done heard the Menage a Trois, yeah. And the Weed. Now, I done heard all that.
Yeah, that 93 Mac was the one. Oh, and the way they flip back and forth like Run DMC on that song. Oh yeah, and this old vintage pimp, Pimp and Bun. So yeah.
And this is, are you there when they recording all these songs?
No, that album was already done.
Okay.
I was there when they recorded Super Tight. So when that album got stolen, you know, I'm sitting through front back side to side. I'm sitting through 316. I had a song on the album that 2 weeks before the album dropped. Matter of fact, the artwork was already done. The artwork was already done, and it was a song that had Pimp rap first. I might have it in the car. Pimp rap first, I rap second, and Big Mike. And it was called High Till I Die. And the artwork was already done for the Super Tight album, and that song was on there. And what it was, it had a Tupac sample. High Till I Die, you know what I mean? And couldn't get it cleared through Interscope. And so they had to pull that last minute. So, but that verse that Big Mike kicked, is that same verse that he put on Bourbons and Lax. It's the bigger the blacker the nigga coming from this swamp. So, yeah. About to smoke a quarter for that right there. Yeah. You know, that's the same verse. It was called High Till I Die.
Okay, tell me about this Sand Jack house, man. Because that's when I hear about that, I'd be like, man, I wish I could have just been in there for like.
Sand Jack was a different kind of place, man. And it's strange, and I was telling some other people one time how, you know, we're kids. You know what I mean? You know, I met Pimp, I think he was 18, Bun, 19. 18-year-old kid telling me he's got a house. I'm like, man, whatever. But when I get to Port Arthur, the boy's got a house. Got that 64 Chevy sitting in the yard, covered up. Got the, you know, he's driving the White Ghost, like I tell everybody, the White Prelude that we used to hit that highway in. I think that was one of the first things he bought when he first got his money from Jive. But that house on San Jack.
And this was like a nice crib. Like,
It wasn't no trap or nothing. And matter of fact, when I got in there, that fucker was fully furnished. That motherfucker had a dining room set. That old wood had a components. That's back when we used to have those big screens with the rear projection. You had the red, the yellow, and the green lights, and I mean, whatever, red, blue, and green, whatever it was, red, blue, and yellow. And they used to shoot the picture. Now, you had one of them, you had money. You know what I'm saying? That motherfucker had one of them big projection screens in his house. It was, and then every room had beds in it. And then when you walked into that, I don't know if you heard of the famous weed room.
I heard the weed room, yeah.
Yeah, the famous weed room is like when you first walk in the house, you're in the main area sitting. And then you go to like the bedroom areas. One of those bedrooms was the weed room. And when I first got in there, he had told me to grab some cords or something out of this closet. And when I grabbed the cords, all I saw was old drum machines that this man had. Looked like he had already mastered. I'm through with that one. You remember the first, the Insonic, they had the gray pass on it? He had that. I'm through with that. He had 808. I'm through with that. Oh, yeah. Like he was mastering them and then just moving on. That's what my mind thought. I never talked to him about it, but for it to just be thrown in there, like I'm fucking through with that one. I'm on to the next. It looked like he had already graduated to where he was. And then when I went there, you know, we sat down and talked. I moved there. I lived there for a while. Yeah, I lived in San Jack for probably about 6 months, 6 or 7 months. And when I moved there, you know, Pimp and Bun are real, back then especially, they were real, I'm not really concerned, but, you know, just mindful about their craft. You know what I mean? They knew if they were going to sign to a major label, they were going to be around New Yorkers, rappers, and, you know, California rappers, and they wanted to represent Texas in the South like nobody ever seen before. And so Pimp knew, or Chad knew, that everybody was on Bun for those lyrics, especially after those first two albums. They were sweating Bun, and they were sweating him about the beats. And he said, Bobo, I mastered these beats. This is in between Super Tight and Riding Dirty, right? We're touring Super Tight. He said, I'm going to do something you might get tired of, you might not like, but I'm going to freestyle to you every day. I got to get my freestyling skills up here. Hmm. That motherfucker freestyled to me every day, and them freestyles sounded like songs.
Hmm.
One thing about them boys, I told you before, when Chad and Bun freestyle or rapped, it was rapping about real life situations, and the shit sound like a song. You see when he freestyled on 106 and Park?
Mm-hmm.
Did it sound like a song?
Yeah.
It didn't sound like he was coming off the, and he was big on that. I hate motherfuckers writing their raps talking about they freestyling. And that's why I said, it's real freestyle, bitch. You know, he was quick to tell you that I came off the dome with that. And they were, practice make perfect, and they believed in practice. And Bun practiced, you know, I don't know. I never really saw Bun practice a lot, but just the, you know, doing it is the practice. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, he was concerned about if he could keep doing it. You know, yeah, bro.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is before Riding Dirty. Yeah, you got it, Bun.
If you had to describe when you first met him, like a young Pimp C and a young Bun, like them then, when you first met him, that young, like their personalities, how would you describe them?
Their personalities?
Yeah.
Chad was already on one.
He was always live.
He was always already live. He walked into that dressing room. I think the promoters had fucked up on his rooms, and they were big on with. Two things about UGK and Pimp C back then. The rooms had to be, he wasn't going to stay in no bullshit motel. It had to be 4-star or better, all right? And the fucking sound system had to be superb. That's why I say at that rodeo, that microphone would have got broken. Or it would have been right in sound check before it got that far. You know what I mean? He would have made sure everybody got to hear him clearly. And that music bumped like it did in your car, you know. So he was big on that. I seen that boy break a many microphones.
Hmm.
Sound check man, mad as not what you call it, the sound man, mad as a motherfucker. But when you sign that rider, say you gonna have this mic, this amp, these, you know, these crossovers and all this, and you come with that boo boo, expect to get treated like shit, you know. And that's what it was. So yeah, Pimp was always on one. Bun's always been Bun. Bun's always been a real humble guy, very intelligent. I always talk about his intelligence. Bun and I used to always, this is shit so funny. We used to act out movie roles and shit because he was, and we were kids. We like to have fun. We do some shit like, nigga, stab that nigga. Like, bless you.
I wonder if you remember that, man. We used to kill ourselves doing that shit, bro.
It was funny to us.
It was making up movie scenes, or it was just,
yeah, we just bring a van or something. Just, yeah, it'd be like, we're gonna do something. Bam! And do the blood just skeet. Yeah, man, we used to have some good things. You know, you're around each other so much between, I was telling this story. Bird, I put it on Facebook. Pimp, Bun, Bird, Mama West, and myself. Sometimes Leroy White was in and out of that too. So between 5 and 6 people, that's all we had. We didn't have no security. Hell, I was strapped, you know, back then. So I was, what, 23, 24 years old, you know. And, yeah, everywhere I go, everywhere we went, I was the one that was strapped. And I don't know if I was hype man slash security, but wasn't nobody gonna fuck with them when I was around. So, and that's how we roll. We tore this South up, the Chitlin' Circuit. We tore the country up, you know, Atlanta, everywhere. We went everywhere, especially through Louisiana. It seemed like we was in Louisiana every week.
I was gonna ask you that. So, you talking about like that whole San Jack area? That was like the forming of the whole Master P relationship and all that, right?
You see, back then, it was different back then. If you go back and and study those UGK albums, those first two, they was more street then, more gangster. The playerism didn't come out on them more until Riding Dirty, you know. But the first two albums, yeah, man, you know, I'm talking about Cocaine in the Back of the Ride, mm-hmm. Short Texas. Mm-hmm. These are songs we did. Hell, I was there. I was instrumental. I took them to a studio in Dallas. I'm not going to say what Chad, I mean, we got to stay politically correct. But the guy who owns that studio, Rick Rubin, he's, you know, he's got a unusual look about him. And Chad would always say, oh, that's this word that we can't say nowadays. You know, we can say it, but, you know, I ain't going to say it on your show. Well, anyway, we went in that studio to do the original UGK show CD. And that CD was the CD that traveled with UGK for years and years and years. I'm talking about the one people may remember when it came on with the shooting from Menace to Society. Hmm. Oh man, when I say we wrecked shops, wrecked clubs, wrecked venues with that motherfucking show tape.
How long was the sets at this time?
Oh man, 25-30 minutes. Hmm. That was good. I mean, they was good sets. Hmm. They were good sets. I say 25-30 minutes back then. Yeah, we did a lot of shows, man, and with that one CD. And even after I became after I left being the hype man, they continued to use that CD, but different variations. They always had the gunshots. It was in different order. I mean, excuse me, same order, but maybe add a song here. Take one song out. You know, if they did a new album or something, they'd add the hit song off of that album. Or you had to put Big Pimpin' in there and, you know, shit like that, you know. But it was the original. That motherfucker with them guns, probably from 94, 5, 6, 7, 8, probably all the way to 2020. Hmm. I mean, 2000. All the way to 2000. So, yeah, and then they started doing, once Chad went to jail, probably is when they changed up the show CD to where it was different variations of it. And of course, they had to because they didn't do many shows after that. But Sam Jack, man, was just regular crib.
I always hear about like the freestyle sessions and all that. Yeah. Man. You know, Big Mike being over there. Big like Mike 3-2 and all that type
yes,
of stuff.
Yes,
and
yes.
3-2, my cousin, man. So
oh, yeah, that's my boy.
Yeah.
3-2 is the one that introduced me to the UGK. Hmm. That's my boy. He called me Bobo the Psycho. I used to go by because of that thing, Bobo the Psycho. And then every time he see me, he'd say, Bobo the Psycho. He came down to Dallas. I picked him up from the airport, and he had this cassette, and he put it in, and it was UGK. It was like the first two or three songs from him. He said, these boys about to be some stars. And they were. I could tell that they were something special. You know, back then it was nothing but the Ghetto Boys and Nemesis. And, you know, you had the Convicts, of course, but they were breaking up at that time. But other than that, the two biggest groups was Nemesis and the Ghetto Boys.
Hmm.
And I can't forget about PKO out of San Antonio. Hmm. Pound Keys and OZs.
Yeah. What would you say, because we're going to get into, you know, Pimp getting locked up, but, like, what would you say was, like, his personality versus, like, before he got locked up versus afterwards?
Oh. He was on fire before he got locked up. Everybody know that, you know. He had dabbled and dabbled in some illicit drugs, and he was, before that, he didn't. I guarantee you, if I'd have been in Atlanta, all that shit wouldn't have happened like that.
Hmm.
Yeah, because I wasn't no yes man. And I'd be done told him, come on, man. So a lot of stuff happened when I wasn't around, I promise you. I'm not saying that I could just, he was his own man. And everybody know that. He took advice from certain people, and he weighed those advices out in his head. And a lot of times he would go with what I said or his mama said or something like that. But once you turn that switch on him and it went left, he's gonna go all the way left. But the pimp after jail was more diplomatic, I would say. You know, he calmed down, he got rehabilitated. Looks like he learned a lot, you know, in jail. He told me he did a bunch of reading. He ain't got nothing but time. He did a lot of reading, educated himself. I don't know, y'all know, Chad never graduated from high school.
Mm-hmm.
So he never graduated from high school. So he went full 100 with the rap career. And this was something to settle him down, educate himself a little bit more. And he did. And then when he came out, he was more, you know, Chad was always a fuck you, he had a fuck you attitude about a lot of people. You know, if you wasn't really in his clique, and I mean, fuck that. Hmm. Fuck him. Yeah, big time. But then when he came out, he seemed like he was more into meeting people. That's why you didn't hear a lot of features on Pimp before he went in. You maybe, you know, the Master P's, the ones you already know of. But you know, not like when he was in and Bun was doing that Free PMC movement. Mm-hmm. Bun was on a lot of shit, bro. So yeah. I remember one time Bun came to Dallas. Fool, during that time, he and I rode around. Bun told me one time, everything you've ever heard me say, I've written it, gone inside the booth, and busted all within no more than 30 minutes. Hmm. And so one day we went to 3 or 4 spots, picking up the back end of a $10,000 for 16, you know, man. And he was killing them. That first spot, I think they felt like they got fleeced, you know, because we was in and out so fast. I was rolling the blunt. He's writing the rhyme. He told me to go downstairs and count the money. I go downstairs and count the money. He coming out the booth. Hmm. That's how fast it was.
Yeah.
And we was on to the next spot. And we picked up probably about, went to about 3 spots that day, 3 or 4 spots. Picking up his back end.
Man, tell me this story, because I believe this happened in Dallas. What's and PMC talked about it on I Know You Strapped. You know I don't fuck with no K-Rude and all that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's
I was there.
Okay, can you tell me that whole thing?
You want the whole story?
The whole thing?
Okay. Okay, they had done a concert here in Dallas. Well, in Dallas. I was thinking I'm in Dallas at home. They had done a concert, and I mean, it was one of those radio concerts where a big event. Everybody's there. Southpaw, Minskin, everybody there. And I thought he had left. When he didn't leave, he called me like 2 days later. Bubba, you going to be mad at me? I'm still in your town. I need some smoke. Bring it to me. When I go up there to the hotel room, he's in the presidential suite. And so I get there, I notice a guy that I been knowing from 7th grade all the way through. I graduated with this guy, and he's a big boy now. Big
in
boy.
In the streets.
In the streets, yeah. Yes. And his brother. His brother's in the music industry. And so Chad takes me in the bedroom section, close the door, and immediately bust out laughing. I said, what's wrong with you, fool? He said, I done pissed them motherfuckers off in there. I said, what? He said, yeah, I got that motherfucker mad. I got to talking about K-Rude in his face, and he ain't like that shit, and he tried to come to K-Rude defense. And so we've been arguing about that shit. I'm like, fuck that nigga. Fuck K-Rude. And I'm like, damn, bro. I said, well, you know who that is, right? So let me rewind. The guy that was there had been wanting to get in the music industry for a while. So he wanted to put money up, be the executive producer behind me as a solo act with Chad producing the music. And one time Chad, you know, we had worked out all the, you know, the details and everything. Chad come down, and the guy never shows up to the studio to pay Chad. Well, that's the day Chad did the Bitch Get Up Off Me beat. Mm. And Chad just said, well, you could have that, you know, cause fuck him. And so once I told him that's who that was, that he didn't stick, oh, Chad fuck with him. And then so how it was, the hotel had a kitchen area. It was the presidential suite. And he had his keyboard and drum machine, all everything set up in the kitchen, like a studio, speakers and everything. And so he went there, smoking his blunt. He, Bubba, check this out, hit that beat. And I'm telling him, the beat was rocking. And he said, this is for them. I just made this for them. So I said, okay, cool. So I leave. They go do their business. 2-3 days later, for some reason, the guy called Mama and said, I want choices of beats. Chad's like, well, shit, man, we already done exchanged money. That deal's done. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I guess Mama must have worked it out on between him and her, but not her and Chad. So, you know, and Chad on one. I get to it when I get to it, nigga. You know, and it was one of them type of things. And he didn't come back to Dallas, bro, probably for another year and a half, 2 years. And when he was coming down, that's why I tell everybody I sat on that bitch get up off me beat for a long time, because I had it for about a year and a half before we even went into the studio and recorded it. We were recording it when that guy went, when he walked into that studio that time. So let me go, hold on. The day before, we had a different studio, right? He knows he's got a problem with K-Rude. And we're like, imagine being like sitting down in the lobby of the studio. And right there where the gentleman's standing is the front, where everybody's parking. And you can see the glass. We see a truck pull up. K-Rude jump out the truck. Oh, Chad lost his fucking mind. Mm-hmm. You done put me in a trap. You done put me in a cross. Blah, blah, blah. Motherfucker, we gone. So they were there to do that beat. That was their first time seeing each other in a year and a half. We're going to go ahead and take care of this. So as soon as that dude pop up, Chad, he gone. Fuck you. So he, oh, man, we didn't get this shit handled. But it was your fault for putting us in a cross like that, really. Mm-hmm. And the next day, as we said, we at the kitchen making hits and ends. We're working on Biscuit Apart Me. And, yeah, the guy show up. I don't know how that motherfucker found us. Because we had a totally different studio. And the studio is called The Kitchen. And what's up, JP? Yeah, that motherfucker, man, showed up. And Chad was hanging with this guy. I can't remember his name. He was from Nashville. He was acting as security. Guy with dreads and everything. And he was in that front back. He was in the front door, right by the front door in the men's bathroom. And the bathroom was more like a old gymnasium locker room. Had those old tiles that your grandma used to have. Mm-hmm. And so it's wide space. And the motherfucker had a Mac 11. And he cocked that Mac 11. And you could hear it echo through the whole studio. And the dude was standing right outside the door. And he was like, I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you. And he heard that. He looked over there. He said, oh, I see what's going on. And he said, well, Bobo, come holler at me. Pimp put his hand on my, Bobo ain't going nowhere. Nigga, that's my homeboy. That's my, oh yeah. Yeah, he ain't going nowhere. And it just went, it went left, bro. It went left from there. And then that's when the next day, I guess, my man Ron, he put a, hit on Chad Life. And the guy had to get in touch with Jay Prince and to see if he could kill Chad. And Chad, they had to have a meeting. It was some serious shit, bro. It was some serious shit, and they was about to try to do my boy. And so, fast forward, after everything's squashed, everything's taken care of, hell, I think Chad might have gone to jail, gotten out of jail. And that's back when SWAT had first started coming on. And he called me, he said, man, I see this motherfucker on SWAT, he crazy, huh? He had, everybody in Dallas know about this story. He was in a hotel room. Something had happened. He with him and some young lady. And he was trying to, the lady was trying to get out. It wouldn't let her leave. The police show up. He don't know it's the cop. He shoot through the door. And shoot a cop. And so when we wake up in the morning, it's a standoff on one of the major freeways in downtown Dallas. And he's in this hotel room. Yeah, so he ends up committing suicide that day. Yeah, live, while everybody's streaming. Yeah, not streaming, everybody's viewing. But yeah, ain't this trip how we talk now? Streaming, likes and shit like that. Yeah, we weren't doing none of that shit back then. But yeah, and he called me and said, Bobo, that motherfucker was crazy for real. He was going to cuss. I told you, bro. Motherfucker wasn't playing. I told Chad that dude wasn't playing. So, in other words, I was trying to rectify the situation within that year and a half. Because, I mean, he didn't want me to stay in Dallas because he thought them dudes were going to try to do something to me. Hmm. But I was like, man, I'm all right. I know the dude, and I'm not afraid. But I just talked to him if I ever run up on him. And every time I saw him, that's all he said. I mean, you talked to your boy. No? But, yeah, I talked to him. Talked to him all the time. Hmm. But I wasn't talking to him about that situation. So, yeah, that was a real, real, real situation. It could have went really, really, really bad. And it didn't end right there. It ended, I mean, I don't know if you heard the situation where the constable was looking for him outside the club that time.
No, what happened?
Oh, my God. Yeah, they had a show probably about 8 months later. And the guy who owned the club, I know his name, we cool now, but Chad had gotten into it with him over some promotion shit. It was always about money or the sound system. Nothing else. It's always business. Chad ain't gonna get into you with you over no person, over not over no girl, no bitch, no nobody. Just business or family. That was it. He wasn't gonna let you talk to none of us crazy or his mama and the money. And so yeah, we opening up for UGK. I had done this song already in Dallas, and it was we opening up for him, and we outside waiting. They coming, and guy walking around with a big cowboy hat on. He ain't got no police uniform on, but he just showing the promo, the black and white glossy picture of UGK. You know these guys? You know these guys? I look at them, I say, I don't know them at all. Have you seen them? No, sir. And so soon as he walked away, man, this nigga out here looking for y'all. And so when they got there, I was on stage, and I walked into the dressing room. They didn't get the message because I left a voicemail. And then I came in, I knocked on the door. They said, hey, blah, blah, blah. I said, hey, there's a nigga downstairs looking for y'all. He got this, that, and the other going on. Boo, 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 boo. Shit, them motherfuckers got about that club. And it's a good thing they did, because that night, the club owner had lit that guy and all his killers up in that club. And they was going to do something to them boys that night. Mm. Rap-A-Lot was in there heavy, too. It was going to be a war. It was going to be some shit that we will probably be still talking about today. Yeah, Rap-A-Lot was in that motherfucker deep. And then they came, yeah. Chad and them came in that club probably 5 to 10 cars deep. Yeah.
That's crazy, because all these things was happening, like, I mean, it's before he gets up, you know, gets locked up, but it's like the master, you know, that thing, the master, thing. Like all these situations, like Pimp was, he was really on it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he was on one. But it was always more of a respect thing.
Yeah.
Because when you look at him, I mean, you see this little young guy, especially in the beginning. Chad just looked like a regular guy with glasses. He used to wear polos and shit.
Was trying to like more take advantage of that?
I think so. Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, when you hear that voice come out of him, you don't expect it. And the shit that he say by him looking like that in the beginning, yeah, he got more edgy looking toward the end. But in the beginning, yeah, he just looked like one of us, a regular, you know, mama, daddy, you came up in a good household. But the motherfucker rip you up with those words. Mm. And that's what it was. And if you came with any kind of disrespect, get ready.
Is there a time that you'll never forget, like, man, I remember Pimp just went off this one particular time?
I remember all of them. I remember all of them. I remember one time we had done the, we're in Lafayette. We had done the Crawfish Festival. But this time we were all mad. I remember Big Mike being on stage, and one of them whole ass security guards on stage got to talking shit. I was going to throw his ass, bitch ass, right in the crowd. You know how you picture what you're going to do to somebody? I said, man, sooner if he touched, put his hand on Chad, I was just going, in the crowd before he even knew it. But it never even got to that point. Big Mike came and kind of diffused the situation. It was, it got pretty ugly.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, right on the side of the stage, on stage, to the side, the crowd could see it and everything. So yeah, it was that particular one, because I remember. You ever been to Strawberries?
Nah, but I heard about it though.
Man, I don't know what it was about that night outside it being the Crawfish Festival. Strawberries, it was the club is here, but they're having it in this outside venue part, right? And they built a big stage and everything. But as soon as we hit the parking lot, bro, I swear it took us probably an hour to get from the front of the parking lot to the stage,
because
people was just, it was just so packed in the parking lot, and it was a big parking lot. I'm talking about like a field, and we were frustrated, and then to get out the car and go in and go through all that shit, it was, yeah, dude almost got one that night. That one I remember all the times he slammed the mic on the ground, but it was all to me. Man, we street dudes, you know. Back then, we young, wild, like you said, wild funky hogs. And I mean, Bun, got into it with somebody, we got his back. Chad got into it with somebody, we were just a tight knit family back then. It wasn't, nobody was gonna do nothing to none of us at that time, bro. So we really never had no problem. I started the one time we went to Monroe, Louisiana, when they thought when they said, "Monroe, I see you looking at me, fool," they thought he was talking about, you know, them, the city. And there was a misunderstanding. Other than that, it was always fights and craziness in the crowds and stuff like that. And we seen some crazy shit going on in the crowds, man. So other than that, now Chad wasn't really like that. It was always, when you heard about Chad going off, it was usually like in a setting like this. You done said something stupid. You done said something fly. And then it's going to go viral. It wasn't going to go viral back then, but if somebody was filming now, oh, he going to cut you up with them words and make you feel about that smile. And he just wasn't getting into it. It was who it was. Oh, this nigga Pimp C went off on us again. He go off on the radio station, people. People keep hearing me saying he was a different guy. I can remember when I got with them, he did they were recording the album, and they were also having label trouble. And once they finished recording that album, you know what he did? He did this twice. He did this with Riding Dirty as well. He sent him like a cassette of it, unmixed. This is the music, it's jamming. You ain't gonna get it till you give me some more money. Oh yeah. Oh, he kidnapped the tape. Yeah, hold that bitch hostage until all the music. And until they came with some more money. And I don't care if it lasted a whole year. That's why it was always so far in between them UGK albums coming out. It was always label issues. Always label issues from a hoe ass Byron Hill, the manager. He's a sewer. You know, he likes to sue people, so I might need to edit that out. But that motherfucker, man. He was their manager at first.
Slid off on, yeah.
Yeah, man. When we were, when I first got with UGK, man, we were doing all these shows. We were having to pay a lawyer $5,000 a week retainer to keep Byron Hill off our ass and keep Big Time off our ass. Yeah, because everybody was trying to sue. So they been dealing with shit. We've been dealing with shit since the fucking very beginning. It never was a smooth ride for UGK. And that's why I think through adversity they shined. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people would have been like, fuck that shit, man. That's too much. So, yeah, they did a lot, man. They went through a lot. And
man,
they stood strong through it all.
Yeah, you mentioned Riding Dirty. How did you feel when you first heard, you know, Pimp say that, you know, put that one day out there, man, with that line, and you know?
Bought it to me right after the studio. Yeah, he hit the highway, called me. I was at a restaurant. He called me and tried to let me hear it. You remember how people say, "Listen to this in the car." I couldn't hear it. Well, he beat me. What he did back then, he beat me, and I called him back from the restaurant, and he said, "Well, I'm on my way." It was him and Leroy White. They drove up to Dallas just to let me hear that song. We played that shit 80 times, 100 times. Back to back to back to back to back to back to back. They slept on the floor and on the couch. Got up the next morning, came back to Houston. But yeah, when I first heard it, how did I feel? Oh, it fucked me up. Because it was still too new to me.
How soon was it between like it actually happening and then him recording the song?
December the 8th is when Little Man died. And he bought me that song, February, something like that. It was pretty quick. February, March, something like that.
Man, that's something that, I don't know, man, it always stuck out with me. Can you talk a little bit about just that whole situation, you know?
The housewives, yeah. Yeah, they were four babies, set of twins. They were like maybe 2 years old. My little boy had just turned 5 in October. The only reason why I was in Dallas was because they were, UGK was filming, recording Riding Dirty. And they were doing pre-production. And the label kept flying them to places like Chicago and New York to meet with all these different musicians and stuff and go to these different studios. But, you know, that's not the budget to bring the hype man or the DJ with them. So it would just be those two. And I didn't have no car in Port Arthur, so I said, man, I'm going to go home, chill for a minute. The album come back out. I just come back. Actually, I was going to come back before the album came out. But the only reason I stayed is because that happened. You know, so I was there and I was going to work through Christmas. They got me a little gig. I was going to work through Christmas. So I could buy my mom a Christmas gift. And before Christmas happened, that happened. Yeah, you know, it was a fucked up situation. 4 babies died, and it was in like the back part of the house, like an add-on section that his granddad, the girl I was dating at that time, her dad had built on. He was a contractor, and so he had built that up. He had been there for years, and I don't know, maybe the wiring got frayed and burnt the house up or whatever, but it was wiring that caused the fire. And yeah, it was fucked up. Still fucked up.
Damn. Yeah.
Rest in peace, Lil John.
Can you still listen to like One Day, or is that something that you kind of just like?
I can listen
because
to
of
it.
That. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, depending on what kind of mood I'm in. I don't like listening to it. I don't like listening to it, but I've heard that song so much that now, you know, during the times of me battling with depression and going through regular life situations and, you know, fucked up shit in your life, you know, my wife and my kids and, you know, just a village of people around me have just, you know, just helped me out and kept me sane, you know, because shit, I spin out of control. I'm that motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? I cuss and she saw me spinning out of control. She, you know, she pulled my coattail and like, hey, might need to go to the doctor. And so, yeah, I was cussing people out and everything, going off on my kids. You know, when depression hit, it's a serious situation that you don't know that you're going through and you don't realize because it builds up gradually, it seems like. And then once it's there, it's just a norm. You don't realize it. And then once somebody calls you on it, it's up to you to determine whether or not you want to do something about it or not. You can be like one of, you know how black people and black men, oh, ain't nothing wrong with me. I ain't going to do shit. But, you know, I ain't taking no medicine. I damn sure ain't going to go talk to no therapist. So I heard all that's good. And I know for a fact that the medication is good. Because without it, I'd be probably, I don't know. I don't even want to speculate. That's my, huh? She wouldn't be with me. See that? She said I'd be single.
Man, talk about it, because you know there's these classic, well, they classic now because of YouTube. You know what I mean? Conversations between you and Pimp, like after he came home.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And Pimp just going off, really. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just this. If anybody who really kind of been into Pimp C and studied that whole thing, you know, like they talk about how Pimp would just be up, you know, 1, 2, 3 in the morning, you know, 4, yep. 5, 6 in the morning, yep. Early, and on calling 10. People. You know what I mean?
Calling people.
Yeah.
Well, he slept during the day. He slept during the day, and he probably get up about 3, 4, 5 o'clock, and that's when his day started. And everybody else is winding down, and he cranking it up. And, yeah, those interviews, man, I used to be on the my wife and I and my buddy DJ Fish, we had this radio show called Dirty South Block Party with Bobo and them. And when you first came out, you know, I told him, I said, man, I got this radio show. Matter of fact, I had the radio show before he left. He knew about it. He asked me, did I still have it? I want to do an interview. I did the first interview with him when he came out. And every time he wanted to vent, the one that's not on there is the most classical one. He's going off on R. Kelly. He's, oh my God.
What was he saying about R. Kelly?
Just like, you know.
Just basically what it is.
What it is. But back then, yeah, it was liking little girls. And yeah, he was calling them Robert, though. He wasn't calling them R. He was calling them Robert. He was calling them by his real name. That motherfucking tape got lost. We all got sick. That was the one. But all the ones with the Mr. Unselfish, and that shit funny. That shit funny.
Yeah, I would be like,
that's, man. Classic.
Classic shit, yeah.
Classic. I'm glad to be a part of it.
Yeah. I'd be thinking like, man, how you got a partner this live? Like, I don't even know. I guess you get used to that type of shit, but it's like, man, I would be tripping.
I was live
every
with him.
Time.
I was live with him. And that's the thing, man. You know, we talk about, I'm going to tell you a story that, you know, Pimp never really went off on me, ever. one of the few that he didn't. And only time mama went off on me, one time. After he got out of jail, they invited me to come out to Club Blue in Dallas, downtown Dallas, New Year's Eve. And I show up. They said, well, man, damn. They want us to come to this place in Fort Worth or Arlington first, and then we're going to come over there and do the show. Well, normally I meet them at the hotel room. We all ride deep together. That was always the proper way to do it. And I went to the venue, and the motherfuckers wouldn't let me in, and they disrespected me. So I left. I went to another club. I want to be somewhere where with a drink in my hand come midnight, you know what I mean? And but as soon as I stepped in that other club, he called me. Where you at? And I told him everything that happened. He must have been pulling up right in front of Blue. They said, that motherfucker stopped the car, opened the door before the car was stopped, jumped out, cussed out everybody, cussed out the police officers and everything. Y'all ain't gonna let Bobo, and then got on stage, did it. Yeah, all over me. Hmm. Yeah, and then that next day, mama cussed me out over that shit. She said, baby, if my baby would have went back to jail, she say, why did you tell him them people did you like that? I said, I just told him the truth. She said, you know he love you. Hmm. He ain't gonna. I said, mom, I didn't think he was gonna do that. I didn't think he was gonna do that. But yeah, they say he went inside the club and acted a monkey on stage about me. Yeah. And people told me, not they said, it did happen because people told me. People have come to me and said, man, what happened? Why you didn't get in the club? Man, Chad was going off on the club owner and the concert promoter. I said, man, we just being ourselves, man. That's just part of life. It happens so much. I would do it for him. He'd do it for me. I'd do it for Bun. Bun would do it for me. Bird and all of them. So we just, ain't nobody, because we was by ourselves. We didn't believe in walking around with all that big security. Shit, we all strapped. At least I am. And ain't nothing going to happen. Back then, that was just our mentality, man. You know, we're 24, 23, 22 years old back then. So we stupid. So in hindsight, we probably handled a lot of those situations a little bit differently. But it is what it is now. We still here. No one got hurt. Mm. You know what I'm saying? No one got injured. No one got killed.
Yeah.
None of that. So.
Yeah. What, man, what's some of your last moments? What's some of the time, probably your last one that you remember being around Pimp or talking to him more?
I was here in Houston the October before he passed. I was supposed to have been coming down here to just clear my head. I was going through a divorce. And he said, I'll just come down here. You can have my high rise. I'll be in Port Arthur. You can be, you know, you keep my high rise. And you ain't got to rent no hotel. I said, okay, cool. So when I get down there, and he said, I'll leave the key at the front desk. When I get to the front desk, he's still there. So I go upstairs. We talk, chop it up for about an hour or two. He said, man, I got to go report. It's okay. He said, ride to Port Arthur with me. I got a report in Beaumont. We're going to go to Port Arthur. I'll bring you back tomorrow. I said, no doubt. So I do that. You know, he wired me up with, everybody don't want to see you in Port Arthur. You know, so I said, all right. I get in the car. When I noticed that the Bentley, that's the red one. It's rolling kind of funny. So we pull over on 10, look at it. It's got a titty in the tire. So we're like, fuck. So we get all the way to the where you got a report, parole office, go back home, and then we must have been there probably about an hour or two. I want to smoke a blunt. I come outside, he come out there with me, that motherfucker's on flat. Hmm. So I spent that time with him in Port Arthur. I was there probably.
What the vibe he was on? Like what?
Oh, I'm gonna tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I spent like 2 days down there. Yeah. And those 2 days, bro, I talked to your boy yesterday, DJ Beto.
Mm-hmm.
DJ Beto, he'll tell you, man, if Chad would have lived another 30 days, the stuff that he was planning out and talking, every time we got together, he was always playing music. And we would I ain't gonna say dream. We were playing things that hopefully they would come to fruition, you know. So he was talking about how he was gonna do a solo album. It was gonna be a hybrid, you know, half singing, half rapping, before Drake, you know. The first song was gonna be produced by Timbaland. It was gonna have him and Justin Timberlake on it. I was like, oh my God, this was right after that first Justin Timberland produced Justin Timberlake album. So they were out the roof anyway. So yeah, I knew that was gonna work. Everybody did, you know. So he talked about he wanted to start a, he said he already had a radio show already solidified with XM and Sirius back then. And he wanted me to quit my radio show, join him and Lil Duval on his radio show. I don't know how true that is, but these are the conversations we're having. Quit your job, come on back down here, be with your family. I still got all the text messages in my old iPhone. Yeah, things like that. Just talking about life. You know, we hardly ever talk about people. We talk about people we know in the past. How such and such doing? You heard about something? You know, that's it. We don't sit around and talk about no other grown men, you know, no girls and no shit like that, you know. We talk business, and we have so much in common that we always had stuff to talk about, you know. So shit I thought was funny, he thought was funny, and vice versa, you know. So he thought I was the craziest motherfucker in the world, and I thought he was the craziest motherfucker in the world. Yeah, I mean, one time we had this party at my house, at my apartment. Well, you know, a ghetto party, bro. I'm talking about that back when dip was, you know, we dipping. We
oh,
doing our.
Oh, yeah, I was dipping. Okay, okay, what? Yeah.
When that shit was over, that nigga said, Bobo, you the loudest nigga I know. I thought my Goody Ray was there, baby. Goody Ray, shout out to Goody Ray James there.
Oh, okay, tell, okay, tell, just tell, you got to tell me about this because I love these stories.
It's a party with girls.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, they dipping too.
No shit. Yeah, it's. I've always been like this guy, especially back then. And Bun, I tell you, I was always the guy who was always like the host. You know what I mean? if I always would find out how to do different shit, you know, like if I was like back then, we ghetto motherfuckers, man. So we go get a bunch of Seagram's gin, Bumpy Face, and I guess that's Minute Maid, pink lemonade, the frozen and the concentrate. Boy, I throw that shit in the blender with the ice. And that would be like a little daiquiri for all the girls. The girls, man, was drinking that shit up. That was the first Bobo special, baby. That was the first Bobo special. That's what we called it, the Bobo special. And yeah, I've had several drinks like that I just make up some shit and they call it and put my name on it. But that was the first Bobo special. And that motherfucker said, man, it's the loudest party I've been to in my life. You say, man, you're the loudest motherfucker in the world, boy. That motherfucker, it was a nice party. I mean, it was weed smoking all night, drinking, just kicking it, man. It was just in an apartment. It wasn't no, you know, kind of like a kickback. You know, wasn't really no party, but it was a kickback.
That sounds pretty loud, man.
Well, he used to live with me.
No shit.
Yeah, he lived in Dallas with me. I can say live with me. He stayed there about two months, maybe 3 months. Yeah, he did. In between, as we were waiting, as he was holding the album hostage, he was in Dallas with me, waiting for Super Tight to come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, we did a lot, bro. Between he and I, you name it, we had some times, bro. Good, bad, and mostly good, though, bro. Mostly, we hardly ever had a bad time.
Yeah, man. Talk about what it meant to like see Bun go do the rodeo. You know, 72,000 people.
You know. Bro, was that not amazing?
Crazy.
I didn't know what to expect. My wife and I had just came back from we got a restaurant we go to in Mansfield called Los Mugahetes. That's our spot, and we go there and they make us our regular margaritas that we don't even have to order. We at the house after that. And I get a text. This is Tuesday, huh, baby? what you doing Friday? I want you to come to the show. I'll be there. I can come. I have all your credentials and everything. So I didn't know what to expect. I talked to my own man about it. I said, yeah, you know, I'm going to Houston to this rodeo. He said, oh, that rodeo supposed to be pretty big in Houston. Your mama, no, my mama's deceased now. My dad is 87. So back when they were courting in the early 60s, she used to try to get him to go to that rodeo, you know, because she said it was a big deal. And then 2 days later, my wife had spoken with somebody. She said, this is going to be a big deal as far as the amount of people. But I still hadn't wrapped my head around it. Then when I found out it was at NRG Stadium, I said, wait a minute. What's that though? And then when I put my foot on that dirt, and I came through that. So we were supposed to be there at 6:30. So I could do, you know, some mingling, eat with everybody, walk around. But Bun didn't give me my parking pass. So I had to hook up with Mitchell Queen and Bird. And by the time they got here, well, trying, you know how it was coming off of Kirby. It was fucking ridiculous. And, we didn't get there till right as the show started. But as soon as I walked out that down that ramp and I got on that dirt and I saw all them people up in there, I said, what the fuck is this? And it was something special. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never been starstruck in my life. Mm. Ever. I've been around some people. I got starstruck. And I got pissed, too, because I would have never... I got starstruck that night. Jay Prince.
It was the first time seeing him?
No! I've been around Jay Prince so much, bro. And we have never been introduced. I know he know who I am. I know he know my story. I know he know my name. But he don't know that I'm Bobo. You know what I mean? And, I mean, hell, like I told you, we was traveling with him through the Nemesis days. So he know that. He know about the I Know You Strap situation. Mm-hmm. He know about the Bobo in the House Fire situation. Hell, the last concert they did in Houston before Chad went to jail on Christmas Day at Chocolate City, I opened up. So it was just me and the middle finger. So I know he know me. And so, yes, I don't know why I didn't. I was going to say that to him and be like, man, just shake your hand. Give me a pitch. I was like, but he knew Bird. Bird called him. He came over there. And this is what I'm gonna tell you about how I really respect this man. Because he could have been like, hey, Bird. He saw Bird, bro. Made a beeline over there to DJ Bird. And chopped it up with DJ Bird for at least 5-10 minutes. Respectfully. Like, I mean, I was like, man, this is a real motherfucker right here. This is a real man. And he was introducing the people in his clique. This DJ Bird, y'all. He shook my hand. I shook his hand. But he didn't even know who hand he was shaking. But that was, I got starstruck. I told my wife I was embarrassed. I wanted to get a picture, man. But everybody else meant that. But, man, you know what it was. Yeah. It's the people still talking about it.
Yeah. Ain't going to be talking about it.
73,600 yeah. people, they say. Top 10 in the history of the rodeo. Yeah, that shit was major, bro. I went through the hallways. Did you go backstage?
No, I didn't
go. Oh, backstage, they had all the pictures of all the different performances. So you could kind of see a timeline of everybody who's ever done that. Man, and I had some people come through there. Well, you know you from Houston. Mm-hmm. Man, fuck. I'm talking about Kiss. Of course, Beyonce, Cardi B, the Jackson 5. Queenie in there talking about, this is my first one right here, talking about the Jackson 5 one. I said, shit. What's up, Queenie? Yeah, so, yeah. That shit was special, man. And like I say, they going to be talking about it. That's history. That's all I can say, history. It blew my mind. It blew everybody's mind. I wish the sound system was better.
Yeah.
That motherfucking stage looked like a Grammy stage, didn't
it? Oh, man. Oh, man.
I said, man, that shit's incredible, man. Yeah. Shout out to Bun B.
Yeah, for sure.
Little bro. No, Bun B's birthday, day before mine. His birthday, March 19th. I'm March 20th, so we...
Oh, y'all coming up.
Yeah, we're the last days of the Pisces. Yeah, we had a party one time in Port Arthur at this club called Bourbon Street. From 10 to midnight was Bun party. From 12 to 2 o'clock in mine. But we came on so sloppy drunk. I told Chess, I'm going to bring you something soft to sleep on. He didn't want to go with us. We did. I passed out on my... We so sloppy drunk. Man, yeah, that was the good old days.
Yeah, yeah. That's what's up, man. Well, man, you got anything before we close up, man?
Yeah, man. I want to shout out to a couple people. I really want to tell people about, you know, I talked to you about my, you know, how the two different, well, we had two different cliques in Dallas. And the clique I was involved with was the All Hearted Del Party Show, the Nemesis clique and everything like that. Well, we're getting ready to restart that All Hearted Del Party, and we're going to make it more into a podcast, interview, things like this. My wife and I will be doing all the, that's Jazzy K, everybody. She'll be doing all the interviews and everything. We'll be playing old school music and things like that, you know, from my era. Mm. Mixing, live mixes, interviews with DJs. Just thing, you know, just trying to get out there.
That's what's up.
I sat back for so long, man, doing nothing because of that depression. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm back out getting active, shit, man, I let my job go. Fuck, this is it. Mm. This is it for us, man. We gonna make this work. We got an IV therapy business that's going. Y'all holler at me. Y'all can get in touch with me on Bobo Luciano on iTunes. Well, I say iTunes. Bobo Luciano Instagram. On Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Holler at me and I get you in touch with my IV, my wife's IV business. We doing it all, man. I'm shout out to all my family here in Houston. You know, of course, the UGK family. You know, Bun, Queenie, what's up, Big Truck, Buck, what's up, Bandit, you know, all the middle fingers, everybody in Port Arthur, everybody in Houston, man. Like I said, this is my second home, man. Mm. I was here last week. I got me some of that good old French's chicken.
Yeah, yeah.
And I tried to go by the Breakfast Club this morning, but.
Oh, man, that line was crazy.
That line crazy, man. Yeah. So we're going to try to hit that up hopefully tomorrow before we can get out of here. I'll let you, man. Yeah. Doing your thing. I told you I've been watching your progress since that couch right there.
Yeah.
And we got, you got to bring that one back. That shit grimy. That's the, you don't want to?
I mean, I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, I like that couch. I thought that's what made the show. People used to shit on the couch, though. Like,
who is the people? Fuck them. This your shit, man. Hmm. Were they the ones that was helping you do what you do and get to this part? Nope. Yeah. Man, do you? That part was, that's a historical couch. How many famous people have sat on that couch?
Oh, man, hundreds. Yeah. Over 100. Yeah.
Come on, hundreds, man. Yeah. That's why you ain't throwing it away. Yeah, I feel you on that. It's a bad man right there. Young pimp. Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, you know, just shout out to everybody, you know, Rogus Life Entertainment, All Hearted Del Party, DJ Snake, DJ Mike, you know what I'm saying? Holler at my kids, you know what I'm talking about? My girl, you know, Joy, Mackenzie, Elise, everybody, you know what I'm saying?
Already.
My family.
Already.
My family. You know, I ain't used to, you know, doing a bunch of shout outs, but I would just say my family.
Yeah.
So I just stay tuned and stay alive. By the summertime, hopefully you'll see some shit from us.
Yeah.
And we're going to come pretty strong in Dallas. Yeah.
So,
I got a shout out to one more person. Highlight my dude, man. I said his name earlier, DJ Fish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's my guy. He stayed down a long time with me, even after my wife decided to go off to college and, you know, pursue her education. He stayed down, and me and Fish went through a lot. And I got to, you know, certain people, DJ Snake, Chad, Fish, they're my guys, man. Don't fuck with them.
Yeah.
And Bun.
Yeah.
Don't fuck with them, please. Yeah. Please.
Yeah.
Make a light on yourself.
Hmm.
I'll tell you. So, we high as fuck. What's up to my cousin Bud? He got a clothing line. I'm going to keep wearing this shit for him.
Hmm.
You know, high as fuck.
I was trying to read it while you were sitting there. Okay, high as fuck. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, for sure. Okay, yeah.
He got a bunch of stuff. It's just the ass fuck brand.
Yeah.
What you would say, baby? Strong as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he got stuff for the girls, pretty as fuck. You know, all that type of stuff. So, we just trying to do our thing.
Yeah.
Make some money.
For sure.
Rap hustle.
Yeah.
Hustle.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, for sure.
That's it.
Well, man, I appreciate you coming through, man. Like I said, I've always, you know, I've been wanting to meet Bobo, man. You know what I'm saying? Man. For a long time, man.
So, I appreciate you having me, man.
Yeah.
It's a cool spot, man. Like I say, congratulations on your growth. Like I said, I've been watching you for a long time, man. And, you know, I know a lot of people in Houston now, you know, the ESGs. I know Slim. I know Flip. You know, shout out to all of them, man. Powwow, all of them, man. And, you know, good guys, man. And Houston is just a great place, man.
Hmm.
I love it here.
Yeah.
I miss Texas.
Yeah.
You know, I love my city, Dallas, but this is Houston, man. Oh, when I told my wife, I said, you want to go back? You want to go back? We can come on, stay down here.
Hmm.
It's just, the culture is just so richer, man, and I love it. Yeah. That's all it is.
Yeah, yeah.
The people.
Yeah, already. Well, hey, man, it's the Donnie Houston Podcast. Bobo Luciano. Hey, man, we out of here.
Donnie Houston.
Subscribe to the Donnie Houston Podcast, man.